100 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this program, very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, September 27, 2022. A humanitarian worker is killed in Unity State during an intercommunal violence.
The woman recognized a person who looted her money. Then he went to open a case against that person. He was arrested and taken to court.
And the Catholic Bishop of Yei Diocese is calling on the government of South Sudan to provide services in areas affected by conflict in the country.
We have to continue to build back, to rehabilitate back all our institutions of service so that when our people come back home, they get out of their places where children can go to school, they can go to health centers.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesperson for the United Nations mission in South Sudan says five people were killed, including a humanitarian aid worker in Unity State's Guit County. A lawmaker with Unity State Legislative State Assembly confirmed the incident and said five people were killed and several others wounded when armed men clashed during a court proceeding in Guit County this week. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
In a response provided via the messaging app WhatsApp, Linda Tom, a spokesperson of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, confirms that UNMISS is aware of the incident. Tom did not disclose which NGO was managing the humanitarian warehouse. Peter Duck, a lawmaker in the Unity State Legislative Assembly, says the trouble began a few days ago when a woman from the Chingyar clan filed a case against a man from the Chinkwad clan whom she believed was one of a group of armed men who roped her. Duck says gunfire erupted during court proceedings in Guit County on Sunday after young men from the accused man's side clashed with men from the woman's side.
The woman recognized a person who looted her money. Then he went to open a case against that person. He was arrested and taken to court. During the court proceedings, the youth who are related to the person being arrested is not a husband of that woman on the procedure of a court. So this is what generate the war, the conflict between the two sides. So they try to defend their relative, and that is how the war has been escalated. The two sides lost about five people.
Doug says young men from the Chinkwad believe the woman falsely accused their relative and started the fight. Doug says the gunfire left five people dead.
Yeah, five people from the both sides. The side of Chinkwad has got three people, and the side of Chinyar has two. With the side of the woman, that the money has been looted, as two people died, and the another side are three. All of them are men.
Doug urges the Chinyar and Chinkwad communities to de-escalate tensions and give peace a chance.
My message to the youth to stop such kind of killing. So they should embrace peace. We can give peace a chance, so that our people may stay in harmony. So it was a matter of misunderstanding. It could be resolved. If it is not because of the youth has been engulfed by violence.
Acting Unity State Police Commissioner Major General Gordon Machar confirms five people were killed during the court proceeding. General Machar says authorities dispatched police officers to the area to de-escalate the violence.
The two Kalan report killed five people among themselves. Three they are that high and two they are that high. There are five. They're killing people. The commissioner left. He went there yesterday with police. They are going to with police together.
Machar urges all communities in Guit County to resolve their differences amicably and allow the police to hunt down and arrest the perpetrators of the clashes so that they are brought to justice. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
The bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Yehi is calling on the Transitional Government of National Unity and other stakeholders to improve service delivery in areas affected by conflict. Bishop Alex Lodiong says while refugees are eager to return to South Sudan, insecurity, lack of health and other services are discouraging families who want to return home. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Roman Catholic Bishop Alex Lodiong Sakor of Yehi Diocese says thousands of refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda are yearning to return home, but a lack of basic services like schools and health care prevents them from doing so. Bishop Lodiong says food rations in the refugee camps are inadequate. For instance, he says one person receives 8 kilograms of food to last an entire month, while the United Nations continues to reduce food rations.
We have to continue to build back, to rehabilitate back all our institutions of service so that when our people come back home, they get out of their places where children can go to school, they can go to health centers, services, they can get the clean water because some of the boreholes are already destroyed.
Following his consecration in May this year, Bishop Lodiong visited several parishes in the Yehi Diocese and traveled to refugee camps. He says the refugees do not own land to grow food. Bishop Lodiong says the refugees are forced to rent parcels of land from the host communities to try produce food. He says the refugees sell some of their food rations in order to rent a piece of land for cultivation. While visiting areas in Yehi, Kajukeji, and Morobo counties of Central Equatoria State, Bishop Lodiong says he found that some of the refugees did return from the camps, but some who had returned decided to go back to the refugee camps because of fear of insecurity in their villages.
Some even got killed because some of our soldiers, our army, are not so friendly with our people in their villages. And some of them got killed, and our brothers are being scared, and some of them are killed. They decided to go back to the camp.
Bishop Lodiong says the situation for returning refugees is made worse due to a lack of cooperation and understanding between the civilians and the organized forces. He says some houses of the returnees are still being occupied by government forces, which causes fear and intimidates returning refugees, but Lodiong says the soldiers are not to blame.
The government need to take care of our soldiers. You know, when I was moving in Yehi, going to those areas where nobody has gone for the last 7 years, I found soldiers, of course, on the road posted in some posts. And when you see the soldier there, you even pity him. You pity him because he's carrying a gun. He doesn't have much clothes on his body. The clothes are torn. You don't have shoes. You will find that somebody is very hungry.
Bishop Lodiong says some soldiers resort to cutting down trees in the bush for charcoal to earn some money. According to the UN Refugee Agency, at the end of August, neighboring countries hosted more than 2.2 million South Sudanese refugees. All of them were displaced due to conflicts that broke out in South Sudan in 2013 and again in 2016. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Kenya's President William Ruto yesterday approved food relief to drought-stricken areas. Speaking in a state house in Nairobi, Ruto said there is an urgent need for measures to mitigate drought. He also said he hopes this will be the last time the country offers food relief to affected areas. There are more than 3 million people in need of food assistance in Kenya. For VOA News, Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Leaders from the drought-affected regions in Kenya have called on President William Ruto to declare the ongoing emergency a national disaster. The leaders say half of the population in the counties is affected. On Monday, the government sent thousands of bags of dry foods and related items to ease effects of drought in northern Kenya's counties. Speaking in Nairobi, Ruto said that the situation is dire.
For the last 4 years, we have had failure of rain in many parts of Kenya. And that is what has exacerbated this situation. And hopefully, we should be able to be better prepared as we go into the future. I want to thank all the stakeholders in not just making sure that we have additional resources for food, but also working together with our development partners in making sure that this food gets to the right beneficiaries and there are no duplications.
More than 3 million Kenyans are severely affected by drought, which has hit at least 23 counties. The government will be assessing the situation on a weekly basis to ascertain the impact of the intervention. Ruto says he will meet development partners tomorrow Wednesday to streamline food relief operations, providing supplies to the affected regions.
It is my hope that this will be among the last times we are doing this kind of ceremony where Kenyans are facing starvation and hunger, and we have to do this. I think it is possible for us going into the future to have a much more proactive approach to situations like this so that we manage them ahead of time and avoid situations of a crisis like the one we are in.
According to the county bosses, the number of people in need of humanitarian assistance in their respective counties is increasing at a high rate. Council of Governor Chairperson Anwa Iguru says that climatic change affecting arid and semi-arid areas has negatively affected livelihoods in local communities. She says counties are facing challenges in mobilizing local resources to address the drought.
Given the immense nature of the interventions that are necessary to save our lives, of our people, and those of the livestock, we further would like to request the national government through NDMA to fast-track the process of actualizing the drought emergency fund, as well as immediately release the equitable share of revenue due to counties to scale up the humanitarian assistance to the household experiencing severe droughts.
More than 900,000 children below the age of 5 are malnourished, with regions experiencing acute food and water shortages, malnutrition, limited pasture, and reduced livestock prices. Education sector has been hit hard this week. Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua is expected to share a meeting with stakeholders to address drought intervention measures in the country. Reporting for VOA's, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, suspected Ebola cases increase in Uganda. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The Bank of South Sudan has ordered commercial banks to block and freeze accounts of Silicon Valley Shares, a controversial financial company collecting money from South Sudanese and promising instant profits. The Director of Supervision's Department at the Bank of South Sudan wrote a circular ordering closure of all the accounts of the firm until further notice pending completion of investigation. A financial officer at the so-called Silicon Valley Shares says he has not received the order. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Weeks after dominating public discussions on social media, where many people said they feared the financial company is a scam operation, Silicon Valley Shares has come under fire from the Bank of South Sudan. In a letter seen by South Sudan in Focus, the central bank says Silicon Valley Shares is being investigated on, quote, issues related to compliance with all the relevant laws of South Sudan, end quote. The letter, signed by Deng Arubol, a director at the Bank of South Sudan's Supervision Department, directed commercial banks to block and freeze all bank accounts belonging to Silicon Valley Shares until further notice after investigations are completed. A bank official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak to the media says Ecobank, a pan-African banking conglomerate with operations in 36 African countries, headquartered in Lomé, Togo, also received the directive and is working to implement it.
That account is definitely going to be closed. We are closing the account. We'll hold the funds in one of our South Sudan's ledgers and then close the account until further deliberations from our regulator, Central Bank. My assumption is there are some people who feel this Silicon Valley has defrauded them. Because most people have invested and they were told they have an account with Ecobank and they will be credited.
The official says Ecobank received the letter yesterday. Last week, dozens of South Sudanese were stranded at the offices of Silicon Valley Shares. Some of the firm's clients who spoke to this program said they had waited for hours to speak with representatives of the company who had disappeared. A week earlier, some clients of Silicon Valley Shares say they became worried when the company announced its online server was down and it would be back in a few minutes, but it remained down for days. With the latest move by the Bank of South Sudan to freeze the company's account, some Silicon Valley clients say their hopes of making a profit from their investments are shattered. South Sudanese John Otim is one of them.
We are not quite sure even if these people have the money in the bank account. Otherwise, there's no any bank has opened the account in the name of the Silicon Valley Shares, what I know. From the beginning, they refer anybody to go to Echo Bank. Since the Silicon Valley started, most of the people have gone to Echo Bank to open the account there. But there are some people getting money from Echo Bank. But when you see the money is reflected to your account, but you see it is not transfer, it is deposit from Silicon Valley Shares. 100% we have lost already the business. Yeah, that one, you cry alone.
Otim says he lost $40,000, including his expected profit. He says he saw the central bank's letter ordering the freeze on all Silicon Valley Shares accounts. Otim says clients like him in South Sudan have yet to agree on their next course of action, but some have contacted the police. Peter Benmayom, a finance officer with the Silicon Valley Shares, asserts that the central bank letter is fake and that their bank's account are safe.
Yeah, we are aware of, but that was a long... That letter is outdated. It has been cancelled a long time ago. It's a fake letter.
Silicon Valley Shares has listed its location as San Jose, California, on paper, but has provided no address in several letters of communication with the clients. A fact check by this program a week ago found out that the venture capital firm could be a scam. There is no company listed by that name in the directory Crunchbase.com. In addition, while the company says they are in downtown San Jose, its phone numbers are not the right area code for that California city in the U.S. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's health ministry today declared the end of its latest Ebola virus outbreak in the eastern province of Kivu. The outbreak was confirmed on August 22nd when a single case was identified. No further cases were found. However, in neighboring Uganda, cases have been increasing. At least 18 cases have been confirmed, and there are 18 suspected cases in the Mabende district. There have been 5 confirmed deaths. As Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala, about 150 kilometers away, people are not worried about the outbreak.
Cases continue to rise in Mabende district, but it's a different story in Kampala, which is about 140 kilometers away. In the nation's capital, many people are not worried. At some of the taxi and bus parks in the Kampala Central Business District, there is no screening of those who enter and leave. It's the same for congested markets and shopping malls. Amon Kija is one of the taxi touts in Kampala.
It's not everybody that who's coming from across is being screened. That one, I agree with it. Because the entry point, those how they enter, they have also other ways of coming here. So we may associate with someone from across that is affected.
Chris Mugabe is a trader in downtown Kampala, but hails from Mubende district. He says people are not bothered by news of an outbreak.
We do associate with the people from across. The main issue with them, they are not taking Ebola as a serious disease. They say that maybe they are charmed.
Simon Kasiate is the spokesperson of Kampala Capital City Authority. He says teams have been dispatched within Kampala and surrounding areas to sensitize the public on the prevention and proper handling of potential Ebola cases.
But we have also sent out communication to our respective surveillance teams on the ground in communities, but also in high population density spaces, markets, taxi parks, bus and taxi terminals, that is, looking at schools and other places like shopping centers in downtown, so that people are on some kind of alert should those coming in, especially from the Mubende route coming into Kampala.
In Mubende district, where the first cases were identified, authorities are finding it hard to isolate those who may have been exposed to the disease. Rosemary Biabasheja is the Mubende resident district commissioner. She says most communities react with hostility and suspicion to suggestions that Ebola may be spreading.
They don't believe, others think government is just trying to make it a business and get money. Others, they think it is witchcraft. But we have made efforts to sensitize and mobilize the communities, telling them of the precautions, telling them that it's better to go to hospital.
Over the weekend, 7 suspected cases fled from their hospitals and one of the returned escapees tested positive. Security has been tightened at the isolation centers to ensure that there are no means to escape. Emmanuel Ainebiona is the spokesperson of Uganda's health ministry. Ainebiona says the ministry and World Health Organization are working to acquire vaccines for the Ebola Sudan strain circulating in the country.
We expect to have vaccines later, and this is after the meeting we shall have with the WHO and other partners. But now we are focusing on prevention, sensitizing the public to know how to avoid the spread of the infection, and also ensure that those ones who report at hospital and are confirmed are given all the necessary supportive treatment.
The Ebola outbreak in Uganda was announced last week after one person died from the disease. Uganda has had about 6 Ebola outbreaks since 2000. The virus is transmitted through blood and other body fluids. The WHO says Ebola has an average fatality rate of 50%. The symptoms include fever, body aches, diarrhea, and sometimes bleeding inside and outside the body. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Somalia's state media on Monday said the military has pushed Al-Shabaab terrorists out of large parts of the country's central area in the latest gains in a large-scale offensive. Mohammed Sheikh Nur reports from Mogadishu.
An offensive by the Somali tribal militia backed by the Somali government was launched in the Hiran region a few weeks ago against Al-Shabaab militants, liberating several key townships before moving on to Gilgadud and then the Bay region in the south. There has been significant progress in the liberation of 40 settlements in the Hiran region alone, with the support of the Somali government's military commandos trained by the United States. However, the actual fight is taken up by the clan-based state-supported independent Mawisle militia as part of the popular uprising against the militants. Local militia members formerly linked to the Southwest Administration of Somalia captured four settlements on the outskirts of Baidoa in the Bay region from militants with the support of the Somali National Army Forces Monday, proving that the uprising against the group has now expanded to the south. State-run media reported Monday that Busley, Bule Jadid, Matani, and Usley were among the newly liberated villages. In an appearance on a talk show hosted by local TV station Sunday, Ahmed Maalim Fiqi, the interior minister of the Somalia government, said the Somali army and local militia tribes had defeated militants in central Somalia after liberating much of the Hiran and Gilgadud regions. He noted that 40 settlements in Hiran and six more in Gilgadud had been liberated in less than 3 weeks, deeming this work commendable. Our forces seized territory from militants, which stretches over 40 settlements, including villages, places where fewer people live and others where more people live. These 40 settlements are located only in the Hiran region, and a new operation has been launched in the Gilgadud region to liberate more territories. And you can imagine what happened yesterday and today when militants fled their dead comrades and ammunition. And so far, six villages have been liberated, and this only started yesterday. VOA has not independently verified the Somali government claims. The Somali military gains come just one day after Al-Qaeda-linked militants attacked a training camp, killing one soldier and wounding six others. The Somali government's campaign to regain control of the country comes at a time when the country is experiencing a raging drought, which UN officials warn will lead to famine within months. Mohamed Sheikh Nur for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. For world news, go to voanews.com. If you missed this broadcast, go to voanews.com/South Sudan. We'll now leave you with Emmanuel Jal and the song We Need Peace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it's really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I
We have been listening to Emmanuel Jal and the song We Need Peace. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Come on, people.